With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of Talking Snooker with Phil Haig and Nick Metcalf. Once again, talking about the game we all love. Phil, how are you? Sounds like you had a great day out of the cricket since we last spoke.
Yeah, treated to a great day up in Leeds at Headingley, my old stomping ground, where I was at uni. What a day for it as well. Perfect weather, great result for England. So, yeah, that was nice. Had a few beers, saw my dad. Yeah, lovely day out. It's great. Thank you for asking.
Not at all. Now, I'm going to bring the tone right down here, but only briefly, I promise you. Because I've actually had a horrible few days. Unfortunately, I've tested positive for COVID, which has come as something of a shock. And I think more the timing than anything. I've just had my second vaccine. I was feeling particularly fatigued at the Open Championship. Put it down to just being a grueling kind of week. But then was pinged on Friday, started feeling worse. The classic COVID symptoms, really. Went for a test and it came back positive. So I have to say, Monday yesterday was horrendous. I really was very unwell, but I've been feeling better today. And hopefully the vaccine's protecting me from the worst of it. I'm generally quite a private person. I thought about not recounting this news, but actually I think sitting here with COVID and not saying that I have COVID would kind of feel absurd. Anyway, the show goes on. That's the main thing to say, Phil. And we often communicate with sign language, don't we? So if I give you a little wave, that's not me saying, you know, shut up or anything. Just don't worry about that. That's me saying, take it on from here, sir. And you can finish it off on your own while I head back to Bedfordshire.
Yeah, no, you've done great to soldier on, and I really appreciate it because I know you were very unwell yesterday, so hopefully everyone listening appreciates it too, because it's a fine effort from you.
Not at all. Well, we're always pleased to be talking snooker, and we have really a very special guest today. She has had a quite outstanding snooker career, today's guest. She's been the World Women's Snooker Champion an incredible 12 times, including 10 in a row from 2005 to 2014. She has also competed before on the main professional tour and will do so again for the next two seasons after she was awarded a special invitational tour card. Away from the table, she has established herself in recent times as a popular snooker pundit on television. We are delighted to say that Rhianne Evans joins us. Rhianne, thank you so much for being on Talking Snooker. How are you?
Better than you by the sounds of it. It's the lovely weather. It puts everyone in a good mood, doesn't it? But all good.
Definitely better than me. But Phil, this is an audio service, but let's introduce a visual element here. Now, we're sitting in quite sort of plain rooms here. Now, Rhianne, I mean, this is how the other half live, isn't it?
It is in the other half of the garden. You don't want to see the other bit.
So we're talking garden, swimming pool and wine. They're the headlines, aren't they?
Yeah, the Queen of the Bay is living up to her moniker here. Just like royalty out there.
But Rhiann, we are genuinely so grateful for you joining us. We've got loads to ask you about your marvellous career, your future and so many of your thoughts about the game. Phil, let's first just reflect a little bit on the start of the Championship League and the action we've seen so far. And listen, I don't want to say that talking snooker is some sort of lucky charm or anything, but Peter Lines comes on the podcast and claims victory in his group and beating Mark Williams 3-0 on the way. Now, you might remember a brilliant tweet from Dave Hendon just after Peter was on here to say he had a winning career record against Ronnie O'Sullivan and John Higgins. Well, now he has a winning career record against Williams. That's quite something, isn't it?
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, if anyone in the game had a winning record against those three, they'd be absolutely delighted. And obviously, Peter's a great player, has been for a long time, but I think he'd be especially surprised to maybe have a winning record against those three more than most. But yeah, some great results for him. And it's, I think, coming back onto tour the way he did, kicking off that in winning ways like that, useful bit of cash on the rankings already. So he'll be delighted with that. Mark Williams, I saw his first game, he won 3-0 and I thought, oh, this might be a comfortable day out for him, but stopped in his tracks by the Yorkshireman. So yeah, congratulations to him.
Is that just one of those weird quirks, Rhiann, that you can have these amazing career records against players that have obviously done better than you in career terms? And I guess it might be sometimes, you know, even the top players can have those players they dread facing type thing.
Yeah, you always get your bogey players no matter who you're playing. But Peter's no mug. He's got loads of experience. He's a hard match player. And I don't think he's one of those that's going to blow you off the table. But I think he's just going to be hard to beat. And he's obviously proven that with the three best that's ever played the game. So, no, you always get bogey players. But, no, it's a bit like Hendry with Johnson Allen, wasn't it?
Mm. Yes.
Winning record as well. So it's strange. It's never the people who you think are going to have that record against them. But they owe fair play to him. Peter's a great guy as well, so he deserves it. He works hard.
But yeah, we were going through the groups last week. And I said, I thought some people who came through Q School would have a good chance because they've obviously been playing a lot more over summer. And then I failed to predict any of them to actually get through. I should have said Peter Lines. It was the obvious choice.
Yeah, definitely.
But then we saw Ricky Walden winning all three of his matches to top his group against Oliver Brown, Alan Taylor and Nigel Bond. On Monday, we saw Ali Carter and Alex Ersenbacher top their groups. Again, Ali saying he's in a good place, Phil, like you've been saying, determined. It's going to be fascinating to see how he gets on this season. He's got the bit between his teeth, hasn't he?
Yeah, it looks good, sounding good, play quite well. Ricky Walden before as well, I think the three wins out there was quite impressive. He was saying at the end of last season, he's playing as well as he ever has, which is something from someone who was world number six at one point. So he'll be one to look out for this season as well. There was an interesting thing in Carter's last match against Dale where he sort of smashed the pack.
Yes.
Because he'd already won the group, so he didn't care effectively, so obviously understandable. But I think the only dodgy thing in these group stages is that the rest of the three players are playing for more money where they finish in the group. So as much as it doesn't matter to Ali, and I understand that, you know, the other guys trying to finish above Dominic, who Ali was playing, they're not going to be that happy to see him just sort of smashing the balls around. That's the only thing I'd say about that. But I saw him tweet that early. He said he didn't see the fuss and he might do it again. So we'll see.
But Rhiann, there seems to be so much sort of talk generally about the break now, whether it's Mark Williams playing the safety one, players sort of playing funny ones. I mean, is it just a kind of trend we're going through at the moment that people are sort of messing around with that particular shot?
Yeah, especially with Willow. He doesn't care, does he? He'll play any shot he wants to play when he wants to, but he's so good to watch. But no, I don't like that break off. I just think the normal break offs. Fine, you just have to play it better, basically. But no, in general, anyone can play any shot they want at any time for me. No matter if you smash them open or roll up to them, it's their choice. They're at the table. It's their game, isn't it? We just have to, as opponent or viewers, just have to put up with it. And if So, right, go on to the next one then. But I did see Willow tweet about Carter's breakup and said this is why we shouldn't have groups. And I thought, yeah, it's a good point, because as Phil said, there's other people involved and it could upset their ranking in the group stages. But at the end of the day, it's up to them to do better, to try and finish higher beforehand. So it's catch 22, isn't it? It's like, can they play all their own shots, or do they have to think about others as well? And that's the trouble with groups. You're always going to get something crop up in group stages.
Yeah, it's especially brutal in these ones, because if you finish last, you get nothing. Yeah. So to go and... I don't think that would have happened in this group. It wouldn't have affected it that way. But go home with nothing because someone was sort of not trying hardest in the last game, it would be hard to take.
Yeah, definitely. That's why... Well, luckily, he didn't mean anything. Maybe that's what he meant by a dead rubber. He knew it wasn't going to mean anything. Maybe that's why he'd done it. Yeah. So fair to him.
I was wondering about these breaks that, as Nick said, it sort of seems to happen a lot more. I don't know if that was all because, or partly because of everything happening behind closed doors. And I don't know if players would have been so keen to sort of roll up behind the pack if there was a full crowd watching and to maybe see the response they would have got from the crowd. But because they spent a season playing with no audience, they sort of feel freer to try things out, maybe.
Yeah, that's possible, because there's a lot gone on that we think may not have happened if there was crowds during the last year or so, and like people winning events or results going certain ways and the way they're playing. But at the end of the day, you're playing there to win. I always enter something knowing I want to try and play my best as I can and win. And I'd say 99% of the players are all like that anyway. But as you say, it could affect it. As you never know by the reaction, it could be, oh, I can't play that one again. They didn't like that one. But I don't think Willow would care if they liked it or not, would he?
Oh, true, yeah.
But just to play devil's advocate on the group thing a bit, you're saying that's a problem with groups. I mean, it's a standard format in sport, isn't it? And, you know, you can't have every event being a knockout. I quite like the variation. And actually, a lot of sports have these so-called dead rubbers. I'm just thinking in my head about Champions League football. Sometimes a team can be through after four games, but they still would try their best in the last two and do everything to the best of their abilities. It's kind of, that's the general professional way to be, isn't it? And I know it's, you know, it's not an exact science, but, you know, that's kind of the way sport works, isn't it, a lot of the time?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky. I think the Champions League example is, I suppose there's so much money on the line and they can get in the Europa League and stuff. I think, especially for sort of the players who aren't scrapping around at the bottom of the rankings, if they've got a game that doesn't matter to the end of the Championship League and they're playing for a couple of hundred quid with no audience there, you can see why they won't be putting in full effort in that game. You don't necessarily blame them. It's not their fault, but it's when it affects other people that's the problem. But, I mean, you are right. Everyone there is a professional. Well, actually, they're not, but most people there are professionals. So they should be putting all their effort in all the time. But yeah, it's understandable. So I don't blame the players. It's just a funny format sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And I just think it's not having it regular in our sport. And I think that's why it crops up so much when people say, a little bit negative talk, isn't it, about group stages and things. Mm-hmm. And plus just being like, is it first to three? Is it best of four or something
best
like that?
Best of four, yeah.
Yeah, because I haven't seen much of it recently. But I just think because it's not played in our sport so much, I think people see as a negative, but obviously if it was played more, they'd just take it in the stride, wouldn't they? It's just another day at the office, basically. Mm.
Phil, can you just mark the time down? It's 9:30 on a Tuesday evening in July, and I've just compared the Champions League football to the Championship League snooker. Just goes to show that COVID can affect you in kind of weird ways. Let's move on to today. Ronnie O'Sullivan has topped his group with wins over Ian Burns and Saqib Nasser and a draw against Mark Joyce. I saw a fair bit of Ronnie today. I thought he was pretty good, rusty in parts and a few sort of odd shots and balls you wouldn't expect Ronnie to normally miss, but generally pretty good for a first showing of the season. And as for the other group, Phil, where we sort of joked before we came on air that it's so close, they're going to be drawing lots, I think. It's there were draws early on. You know, it hurts your head. You know, Have you got your abacus out to work it out yet? I still think it's up in the air, isn't it?
Well, the game, it seems to have finished. Fergal has beaten Mark Lloyd 3-0. And we think that means Fergal's topped the group. He's picked it from Michael Holt on high break. I don't want to be wrong here, but I think that's right.
Because Fergal made a century, I think.
Fergal made a century, I think, in his very first frame of the whole day. They both finish on 5 points, both with the same frame difference. And Fergal's break of 100 will beat Holt's break of 67. So a bit of a sickener for the hitman there, having topped the group and just needing Mark Lloyd to take one frame off Fergal. But fair play to Fergal for doing it. He's topped it and he'll be through to the next stage.
I mean, Rianne, that would be a sickener for Michael Holt, wouldn't it, to lose on something like that? I mean, it's part of the game, of course, but he might lose a little bit of sleep tonight over that, I imagine.
Yeah, it's a tough one because the groups, and then you work hard trying to scrap every frame you can to get a point, and then you lose it on a high break, and they'll do this in the ladies sometimes, and I just think it's one rule that I don't like. I'd rather have a playoff or something like that. But it is what it is. And yeah, it would be a sickness just losing it on the high break. But never doubt Ferginator.
If they made him hang around and have a one-frame shootout or something, that'd be
good. You've got to think of something, or blew off the spot or something. At least you've lost it. You haven't just because of a break. Do you know what I mean? But for me, I don't like the high break situation. But I suppose it's a quick way of going through the motions of getting the results down without dragging it on, basically.
Mm-hmm. And getting through with 5 points, it just shows the interesting vagaries of these group situations, eh, Phil? Because unless this is me getting my maths wrong, you could easily go home with 6, couldn't you? 2 wins but lose the third, another guy getting 3 wins, for example.
Yeah.
To get through with 5, that just shows how tight that group was.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that happened in another group, actually. Ursenbacher came through with 3 wins and Fernandez went home with 6. Definitely can. And I mean, in that way, Holti will be hurting that. But if you only win 1 of 3 games, you can't really complain too much. although I'm sure he will complain a little bit.
Never.
But we must now focus on you, Rianne, our special guest. As I say, we have so much to ask you about. But first of all, let's make it as topical as possible. The Championship League, your first appearance of the season in the same group as Tom Ford, Simon Lichtenberg and Simon Blackwell on Thursday. How are you looking forward to it? And are the nerves starting to kick in yet?
I'm actually really looking forward to it. Obviously, working with Chris Henry a little bit. I haven't worked with him so much during the little break, but done a few lessons before and just show me a few things to work on, a new perspective on new routines to try. So it keeps you interested in trying to improve yourself. And I can see little targets that I'm getting now. So I can see an improvement on the practice table. It's just taking it to the match table, especially like a new season, but as a professional now. So now I'm really looking forward to it. I just wish it was when it was a little bit cooler outside so I can enjoy the sun a bit longer, but no, I can't have everything, I suppose. But no, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's not snooker weather, really, is it? I think I saw you on Instagram or something, and practice must be hard work in this heat.
Oh, definitely. Practice on your own is bad enough, but practicing on your own in 30 degree heat, it was tough going, but I'll try and sneak a couple of rays in at the end of the afternoon.
Yeah. You mentioned you work with Chris there. That's been going on for a little while now, hasn't it? But obviously he had a great World Championship with Sean and Mark in the final. What does he sort of bring to the table?
He just showed me a new way of looking at what I'm doing. Well, before I was thinking that I was putting side on everything, was actually I was just aiming wrong.
Right.
So I've got to train my eyes to see my way of seeing, basically, and obviously train it all to come back in. But it's just things that you can't see, you think, well, that can't be the problem then because I can't see it. But obviously having someone in your corner who knows what they're on about as well, and I really like him as well, and I trust him, so we get on. So that's a main thing as well. I think you need to be comfortable and believe what you're doing, in order for it to work. It could be anything, but as long as you believe it, it'll work. So now I'm intrigued and looking forward to Freem helping me, especially headspace as well. Obviously, you get told that you shouldn't be there and things like that. And he's just like, focus on you, believe, focus, try, just focus on what you've been learning and training hard for and just let it all go, really.
Cool.
Do you think that's, you talk about the slide there and about you've been aiming wrong. Is that something that you think might have come into your game recently, or might have you been doing it for a few years and not realised? I'd be interested to find out a bit more about that.
I just think, especially if no one's in your corner in that respect, like at the table with you, knowing what you do, I think it can creep in and it'll probably get worse and worse over the years. So the longer you leave anything, it's going to get worse. So you then perhaps that's why I thought I might have been playing with side, because then you try and overcompensate for it. So it's just training routine, especially with the balls as well, because it doesn't have to really be there for me to see it, because you can see it with the balls yourself. So you believe it straight away because you can see it firsthand. So yeah, it's just remembering to do it and see if I can do it under pressure, basically.
So that's his the balls, not just balls, isn't it?
No. The balls, not his balls, the balls.
Explain that there, the sort of big, like this is his own sort of training aid thing, isn't it?
Yeah, they're just ever so slightly like lighter. They feel like ping pong balls actually, and they've got a very light weight in them and everything, but it just exaggerates what you're doing wrong so you can see what you're doing. So obviously when you hit a normal snooker ball, it's heavier, so it's not going to do as much as what these balls say, but it's just going to make you more accurate in the long run, as long as you keep doing the right things, basically.
Yeah, it's clever.
It sounds like that's going to be invaluable work for you. I'm just wondering, are you glad it's a bit more of a low-key event to start the season? I mean, the Championship League still has its value, of course, but it's not the bells and whistles of a really big ranking event. Do you think that'll suit you?
I'm hoping, because I was talking to someone the other day about it, and I was saying I think I'm glad that it's just, I say just the league situation, but it's not a big event, so not many people are that into it, because you see a lot of moaning, oh, I don't like this format or anything like that, and it's not on mainstream TV. So, and obviously I don't think there's crowds either at this, so it's probably just fairy steps, basically, get me a foothold onto the tour and obviously get used to the conditions and the atmosphere and the opposition and the situation, basically. So hopefully it's all the positive for me. I'm gutted for Anya, actually. She should have been playing today, shouldn't she? So she would have had the same situation.
Of course, she should have been in the Rondi group, yeah.
Yeah.
Gutted for her. Have you spoke to her at all about that?
Yeah, we've swapped a few texts and everything. She was gutted, bless her, but she's been advised not to travel due to COVID and the risks going on and everything. And she was absolutely gutted. She said, but I'll still support you, don't worry. So we're still supporting each other.
Did she have any word that she might be back for the next one or anything? Or does she not know?
I don't think she knows at the moment. I think they're just playing it by ear. Hopefully she can get across and just settle down here, find somewhere where to stay for a few months, get settled in. Because you've got a big chance. We've been given a big opportunity for us. It's news when we receive the news, and obviously for women's snooker in the future to be given a spot. So it's we want to make the most of it. Do you know what I mean? It's not every day we've got this chance. So she's a little bit gutted, bless her.
Yeah, absolutely. And have you played any of those three guys before that are in your group?
My memory's not great. I have practiced Tom Ford a few years ago, but he did message me. I'll put on Where's Good to Go for a few days, and he went anywhere away from Leicester on Thursday. No, but I don't really know the other two, but I know Tom a little bit. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, shout out to Tom, by the way. He's been on commentary this week, and I thought he was really good.
Yeah,
how is it?
Yeah, a few players have volunteered to do that. They popped into the box and I had a couple of frames where he was on. I thought he was doing really well.
Oh, that's good. I didn't know I know there was offering commentary to players, but I don't know obviously who's taking it, because I haven't seen anything. But he's quite good, Tom. He's been got the experience and things like that. So I'd imagine he'd be quite good in the box.
Hmm.
Yeah, he had quite a nice, gentle style about him. He seemed to do quite a lot of today, actually. And I didn't actually hear him on the match, but I think Peter Lyons has been doing some as well, because I saw a clip online where he was talking. So I think he was doing it as well. So it's nice to have that shared around, isn't it? And to get a different perspective. And we'll talk a lot more about your punditry work later, Rhian. But you mentioned about the big opportunity you've been given. I mean, must have been a very proud moment for you and on Yi, but you're obviously the one here at the moment talking to us. Must have been a very proud moment for you to be given that special invitational tour card.
Yeah, definitely. I've been fighting this battle for quite a few years now, and it just felt like we was banging our head against a brick wall. We just wanted more opportunities for women, more youngsters to play and have a light at the end of the tunnel, so I can be pro, because we got a women's tour, but you're not classed as anything. We didn't know it was used as a progression tour. We just thought we were just a women's tour. So we didn't expect this news to come along. So when we did, me and Anya was both shocked. We both texted. She said she burned to tea and I nearly crashed my car. So it was that. But as I say, we've been trying to fight for women's snooker for so many years, even to have the world champion or just something just to promote women's snooker. Instead of like a tour card, I was saying just first top up choice or something like that. Top two women or something like that. But this is fantastic, because hopefully it's set in stone now that it's going to continue for years to come. And obviously likes of Bex and Mink, Maria and all those will all have an opportunity to fight for that spot as well now.
And are you intending to carry on playing on the women's tour as well? That's still available to you, isn't it?
Yeah, they still want us to play, and I'm thankful that as well, because we want to support it. We have done for all these years. We don't want to stop supporting it. I think at the moment a couple look like they might clash the dates. Hopefully not many will, and then we can play in as many as we can.
Mm-hmm. And we spoke about this recently after the announcement came out, and there was always going to be sort of negative comments. There always are about everything, aren't there? But I think, were you sort of taken aback a bit by some of that?
I knew it was going to come, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I get it without that announcement, so I get it every day at some point. But you just got to use it, try and ignore it, basically. I was taken back by some comments because I know them. But in general, I just think that's your opinion at the end of the day. We're the ones playing snooker. We've been given the opportunity. We're very grateful. And hopefully we can spur snooker on in general around the world, especially for women as well. So I just think, try and use it to your advantage, basically.
Mm-hmm. And certainly it seemed like the positives outweighed the negatives. We were talking actually before you came on that Alan McManus did a very nice speech at one tournament. I can't remember which one it was, though, but it was a very passionate speech. It was great. And I think that was the prevailing attitude rather than negativity.
Yeah, definitely. I've obviously known him throughout the years on and off, and then worked doing a little bit of work with him as well. I've got to know him, and he still calls me Reenie though. No, he was just a really nice man. He's so positive. He's anything that makes anything good in the sport, he's up for. He's not negative at all. And I think what he said was actually spot on. And coming from someone back in the day who played all them years ago, to know how the sport is changing and still agree with it, I think it's amazing.
Yeah, he's a very progressive character, actually, Alan. We certainly found that in our dealings with him. Phil and I mentioned that a few times. And a delightful man as well. Now, I have to ask you this. Do you think that people have genuine qualms about the decision to give you an Onyi tour card and the fact that the Women's World Snooker Tour will act as a qualifying tour for the main circuit in future? Or do you think that there are some people in snooker that are just plain sexist?
I think a bit of everything. I do think it is a bit of everything. I think in general, it's really positive. But no matter who you are or what sport or what line of work you're in, you're always going to get all this. And I just think eventually, hopefully, they'll come around and see, oh, it's a good thing. Because not only is it going to be benefit me and Anya at the moment and obviously other women in the future, but I think it's going to be big for snooker in general, so it can only benefit those as well. And I just think at the moment, because someone was a bit sour grapes that it wasn't them or it should be someone else and things like that. I just think eventually, I think, fingers crossed, they'll come around and see the positive side and that it's actually worked for snooker. And people got it mixed up. People were saying, oh, it's a invitation card. It's not. It's a way of qualifying for a tour now, like the under-18s, the under-21s, the Europeans, the World Amateurs, the Oceania, the Chinese tours. Everyone can qualify from a different category now. So I just think it rounds it up. It equals it all out. And they keep saying they want snooker to be a more open platform for people. So this is the way to do it. And this is the way forward for women and snooker for me.
Yeah, I think that's the point, isn't it? There are all those very specific ways on that are targeted at a certain amount of people. And, you know, women are half the world. So why wouldn't you target that enormous pool of people right there?
Yeah, and they keep saying that we're not good enough, we can't do this. But we've been supporting our own tour and we're the top two players for some years now, on and off. So we're like... We need that next step. We need something to push us. Do you know what I mean? We keep pushing each other on the women's tour and obviously a few others now as well. So we want to take that next step and that next plunge to say, right, I want to test myself. Okay, it might take me a while, but I do think we would do okay. I get a lot saying, oh, you won't even win a frame, let alone a match and things like that. But I just love to prove them wrong, to be honest.
I was going to say that I hope that's not extra pressure. I hope that's just motivation.
Yeah, it is pressure, but then you've got to use it as motivation. Do you know what I mean? You think, oh, because like when I used to play like my one match a year, they used to give me invitations to like the Worlds or the Champion of Champions. I was playing for all women, but people don't, you know what I mean? It's like I've got this pressure to perform and do my perfect snooker, but it doesn't happen. No one plays really perfect snooker. And I'm trying to say, oh, I should be playing like them, which I shouldn't be because I'm not one of them. But I should be playing the best of my ability, not theirs. And you could, it's a way of different ways of thinking and not putting so much pressure on yourself and just trying to enjoy it and bring the best out yourself, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly remember the champions not so long ago that you gave Sean Murphy a hell of a game, Rhianne. So if there are doubters out there, there must have... have been silenced to some extent by seeing what you do, but you obviously want to do a lot more. Now, what I'm interested in is, what did you learn from your previous experiences when you were on the main tour that you might use this time round?
And like I just said, I can't be perfect. I'm going to miss balls. I'm going to make silly mistakes and I've just got to get over it and get on to the next one and not think I'm a top player and want to play like them. I've got to play my game, play to my strengths. And just learn, basically. I want to enjoy it as well. The main thing, you hear a lot about Ronnie and Williams and that now, they just want to enjoy it, and sometimes it brings out the best in you. But it's easy for them because they're loaded. Do you know what I mean? They've got a few pennies behind. But when you're trying to earn a living from it and you're relying on that, it's a little bit harder, but you've still got to want to enjoy it. And to be honest, it's the hardest sport going, so you can't knock yourself for making the odd mistake, can you? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Judd's made similar comments to that recently. He said he wants people to look like they're enjoying themselves.
Yeah, yeah. I read that somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, and I get what he's saying, but it is much harder when you're literally trying to win a frame to pay the bills, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. When he says, oh, you've got to be... sexy snooker and all this and whatever, naughty snooker and just go for a few flare shots. I'm like, no, I'm rolling it in or tucking you up behind that yellow because I need that. but that's why snooker's so great, because you have got literally both ends of the scale. You've got people fighting for their lives and people just love to play snooker and playing for the fun of it. And when you're more relaxed and playing for it, you probably play your best anyway, but it's just trying to find that right balance.
Yeah.
What's your relationship with snooker, Rhianne? Do you absolutely love it?
No. No, it's all I know, really.
But is it like, dislike?
Sometimes I absolutely love it, sometimes I absolutely hate it. Not going to lie. But no, because I was never a snooker fan. I never wanted to snooker. So I've never had that geek snooker inside me sort of thing. Like, I want to, like, when you're young and you're playing, I never had that. And you want to be like Endre or someone when you're playing, pretending you're them at the World Championships and that. I never done that because I never wanted to play snooker, and I just sort of played because my brother played, and then entered some leagues, and then got the forms for the World Championships entered and got to the semi-finals and got to play at the Crucible. So I was like, okay, I'm okay at this. I should carry on. And then I haven't looked back since. So, but obviously you do, I do love it really deep down, I think. But no, I just think because it's so hard, it's intriguing. Do you know what I mean? It keeps you wanting to come back all the time. And obviously there's always something that pulls you back in. It's like, do I want to quit? No, I've just won the Worlds. Or do I want to quit? No, they've just updated the women's tour. And do I want to quit? No, they're on about giving invitation cards and things like that. So there's always something that draws you back in, and let alone trying to improve yourself. And it's a love-hate relationship.
And where do you stand on the kind of state of the game? I know this is you could talk forever probably about this, but the comments that Judd made to Phil Haig earlier in the year about maybe the game needing to modernise a bit and maybe stuck in the past, some people within the game are always focusing on nostalgia. Did you recognise the game in some of that, or do you think Judd went too far? What was your view on that?
I think he had a little bit of a point, but why lose the history? That's what snooker's there for. It's the World Championships is known before the history at the Crucible. Do you know what I mean? So why would you want to lose that? You can update it and adapt it for definite, but I just think you need to find a good balance. And when he says you got the shootout, he never enters it, which is a new fun format. He doesn't enter it. So I'm just like, well, if you want new things, you've got to enter it if they put it on the plate for you. Do you know what I mean? But I just think in general, I think he did have some good ideas and things like that. I think doing the different commentary in the box with all new players, and I think it adds that bit of fresh air to it, keeps people interested. And obviously you got one frame shootout, you've got short formats, you've got long formats, you've got the whole Bell suit situation, you've got shirts, you've got polos. I think there's not much you could really change with snooker, I don't think, in my eyes. But I'm looking forward to see what they do in the future. Maybe it could come along, but in general I just think it's not that as bad as what he made it out to be, basically.
I'd be interested to hear your view on the dress code from a woman's point of view, because I suppose you near enough have to wear a suit as well, but that must feel even more unnatural for you guys.
Yeah, definitely. It's not the best attire, is it, for a woman? But Anya's not my pal because she loves it. I don't know if she loves it. So no, I just think maybe women shouldn't have to wear a bow tie. They can have a little bit of an open neck, make it a little bit more feminine. And obviously you can change the colours up a little bit to make it a little bit more feminine. But in general, I don't think there's much you could change, though, for it to adapt to it. I'm not sure. I have to come up with some design ideas, I think. But and say you've got polos, but then that's not feminine either, is it? So I think you just got to try and adapt your style to it, I think.
Are the rules in the rule book the same for men and women, or are they sort of slightly tweaked?
No, I think they're the same. Mm. I think, but when I did play at the Champions, they did relax the rule because I was a woman, I think, and said, oh, it looks better if you don't wear a bow tie. And I had an open collar. And I don't think it looks bad. I think it looks better, actually. But I'm not sure what everyone else thinks. And I do struggle wearing a bow tie, to be honest. I feel a bit under pressure with it on and a bit restricted. So, yeah, I'm not looking forward to the bow tie situation.
No, again, not in this heat. No one wants that.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I'll just let them change the dress code for this because they're what it is in there.
Mm.
Just been shopping for 4 hours to just try and find a black polo shirt, and I ended up buying a men's. So it says it all, doesn't it?
Just to go back a bit, actually, it's just come to me. Your brother, who I guess was a good player from what you say, you say you weren't into snooker. So what But what made you follow him? Because he did so much of it, and it's natural sometimes when a sibling does something. Or did he ask you or persuade you? How did that happen?
I was like his little shadow, basically. Followed him everywhere. But I've got two brothers, they're both regular century breakers, just that the middle one, he just wasn't as competitive. He was good, but he just didn't play many competitions, whereas Ryan used to go practicing everywhere and entering every competition he could and things like that. So, and I just wanted to be by his side, basically. And then he was late turning up for practice session when he had his own table and we owned a club a few years ago. And his mate says, oh, get a cue and hit a few balls with me. So I've done that. And then sort of went from there. Really had 20 odd my first effort. So I was like, okay, I can play a little bit. So,
wow.
In my bunny slippers.
And would your parents have had an interest in snooker? That would have started it for the brothers and then obviously you in the end?
Yeah, definitely. My mum was like regular 60s when she used to play, and when she was dad, she taught my dad how to play. So it was, we had a family team.
Wow. Must have been a pretty unbeatable family team then. Not many families could match that, Phil.
It's when I hear like proper sportsmen and women who have stories like this, just endless jealousy for us mere mortals. You know, I've played for years and I'd be very pleased with a 20 odd break, never mind doing it first every time I picked up a cue.
Yeah, but what it was, my brother had this cue that I really wanted because he had a new one made, but he didn't like the shaft, he didn't like the arrows on the shaft, so he swapped his old shaft and new butt, and I wanted to use the other parts, like basically a bit new. And he went, no, you're not having it till you make your first century. And within a week or so I made a century, so I was like, yes.
Wow. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, what you going back to that conversation you're having before as well, you're sort of talking about, it sounded like you were considering quitting at times and then saying things drew you back in. Were there things you wanted to do outside of snooker that you attempted to go and do?
No, that's why I always went back to snooker. No, it was just so hard financially, and I played for 5 days winning the world championships and won £400, I think. Do you know what I mean? And people say, oh, I don't do enough for sport and I don't support women snooker. So I'm just like, yeah, I've gone, not only me as well, imagine all the players that didn't even win it. They're all out of pocket, do you know what I mean? And they've supported all these years. So it was just tough. It was, as much as I wanted to carry on playing, it was just, I need to get a job. I need to be financially. I mean, my mum and dad have been amazing. I could never have done it without them, especially with my daughter and looking after my daughter while I played and things like that. So it's just been so tough at times. People don't realise that aspect. They just see you on the table and that's it, basically. That's why, like, Ronnie's background or William's background, you don't know what's going on behind closed doors, and you can't really judge them just off the snooker with everything in life. So it's just tough out there. It's when you, as I say, you're playing for £100 and you're thinking, oh, that'll pay that bill now, and that black offer spot becomes a hell of a lot harder.
Yeah. And I mean, the prize money in the women's game, I don't want to say scandalous because obviously there's reasons behind it, but it is very low, isn't it?
Yeah.
And especially go on.
No, carry on.
Well, you've had a lot of world championships at very nice, exotic-sounding locations.
Yes.
But it means you've got to go and you've got to get to the semis probably to even make your break even.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the most I've ever won in a ladies' event is £6,000. And I've been playing, I don't want to say how long now, but nearly 20 years I've nearly been playing. So it's, and to say it, because we've always thought, it's progressing, we're going to get better, and then something happens and we take a step back all the time. It's like we've never had that opportunity just to go all guns blazing, saying, right, we've got this path now, we're going forward, but we go forward and then back, and then forward and then back, and fingers crossed now with all this, it's only going to push it. And as you say, when you've got, like, the world's in Thailand, you need to make the semis just to make your money back, you know what I mean? And it's tough, it's really tough. So this is why you cannot knock any woman player supporting, no matter if they've just starting out or they've been competing for years, to support the tour. And I think it's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing it for the love of it. I spoke to Bex Kenner before, and so much love for snooker. It's their life, isn't it? And yeah, you can't not want them to do well, people like that.
No, exactly. People don't realise, because these people don't get to see us play that much, so they don't really realise what's going on and the work that goes in to try and do it, like with all the background staff and everything like that. So I just hope, fingers crossed for me and obviously all the other girls now, that this is a massive step forward for us and it continues in this way.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you see hear numbers like that, prize money like that, it's fair to say that snooker does lag behind other sports. You know, it really is fair to say that. I mean, we often make snooker and darts an equivalent, I think, in some ways, Phil. And you know, I wouldn't ask you to come out of the top of your head and say prize money, but I can imagine women's darts is so much further down the road, for example, than women in snooker.
Well, sort of. There was only the BDO World Championship. It was the one that had a women's world championship alongside the men's. And that was sort of scandalously low compared to the men's, really. I think I'll just dig it up here. So, I mean, the BDO is defunct now, but I've got the 2019 World Championship here. Glenn Durrant won 100 grand for winning first prize, and the women's winner got 12 grand. So it was still a massive difference. And then the PDC, sort of similar as it was Barry Hearn run, they didn't have a separate women's one. They just said it was all open to everyone. So women could compete on the main tour, but they never did, really. So, yeah, I mean, it's a long old way from tennis, isn't it, where they were?
Yeah, fair enough. No, that's a fair way. I thought darts was a little bit further down the road than that. Rhianne, I'd like to ask you about your punditry work. You seem to love doing it. Do you enjoy it as much as comes across to the viewer?
Oh, does it? Because I'm so nervous. No, when I first started doing it, I was like, I really want to do it, but I was like, oh, I hate my accent for a start. And then...
Oh, dear. Why?
I think it's because people, you don't hear it on TV, do you, basically?
You should. Not enough usual accents on television.
Exactly. That's what we say now. But everyone, right, they're just like, be you. Just talk how you talk. We love it. Just carry on. And obviously, working with people that you know, you get more relaxed. And the more you do it, the more you feel more confident doing it. But no, I do really enjoy it. Actually. It's something I'd like to do a lot more of.
I think you can tell, and this isn't a criticism of what you started like, but you can tell you've relaxed into it and you get more confident just to say what you think, I guess, more than anything.
Yeah. I remember when we first got the gig and Ronnie went, how many world titles have you won? And I went, like, I don't know if at the time it's 11 or 12 or whatever. And he just says, well, you know what you're on about then, just say it. Don't care if anybody agrees with you or not, just say it. But it's hard because you're like, oh, I don't want to say too much, because you still see these people, you have to play these people, but at the end of the day, it's your job and that's what you're there for. But now I do really enjoy it, and fingers crossed I get more work in the future.
Yeah. What's it like hanging around with Ronnie and Jimmy then? That must be a barrel of laughs, mustn't it?
Oh, they bore me. I don't like it. No, I don't. I love it. I absolutely love it. Obviously, I've got a little connection with Ronnie because my best friend is his cousin. So sort of through that way, Maria. And I just love Jimmy. His stories, I could just listen to him all day. Yeah. He's just a big dick, isn't he? I just love him. He's brilliant. And obviously Andy and all the Eurosport team and the BBC, they're just all so nice. I haven't met anyone I don't like it. So I just love it.
Yeah, you're on Eurosport. Have you been on ITV as well? Have you done all three?
No, I've not done ITV yet. It's on my checklist. It's on my to-do list.
Well, that's brilliant. Well, and will you carry on doing it? How will you play it the next season now with you playing more on the main tour? What will your thinking be on that score?
Obviously, playing is my priority, and I'm going to do what I can when I can practice and things like that. But if they do ask me, I will want to do a little bit, but obviously, depending on formats and things like that. But no, say if it's like towards the latter stages, obviously I'm not going to be winning events, am I? So fingers crossed in the future, maybe one day, but it's early days at the moment. And I just want to maybe do a few days here and there just to keep me involved, basically.
Did you ever do commentary? Because I remember I saw you in Wales and you got the chance and you were not sure what to do about that.
I first done commentary for the seniors and I was doing it with a little bit. And it was okay. And then I done a little bit at the shootout a couple of years ago, I think. Done one or two frames, I can't remember. And I do struggle with commentary. Again, I think it's maybe not doing it as often, but it's knowing when to talk and knowing, because everyone plays different shots, so you're calling a shot and then they play it, so it makes you look daft, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean? But not the only one, but it's just hard. And you think, oh, should I talk about this one now then? And then it's just, and then you see all the pros that have been doing it years and they're just rolling off the tongue, doing this, doing that. And the angle's totally different on the screen, you can see. Mm. So to me, I'm like, oh, that don't go. And he's like, oh, it flies in. Just like, oh, great. My eyes are that bad then. But no, you just realise how good they actually are. When people criticise them and things like that, I just think you haven't been sat in that box next to them. They are differently. They are brilliant.
It's just such a long time to be talking for as well, especially, I mean, if you get the wrong match. Some of those seniors matches, they're not long format, but they're long phrase.
Yeah, definitely. It's a bit like, do you want to be a ref as well? Otherwise, you've got to ref the matches or something. Yes, but no, commentary at the moment, not for me. But all fair play to those that do, because it's hard.
Yeah, we're blessed with some terrific commentators in snooker. We really are. Phil, shall we move on to our questions from the listeners now, do you think?
Absolutely, yeah.
Let's do that. We've had some in, of course, for you, Rhianne. And the first one comes from Paul Barnsley on email. Nick and Phil, delighted to learn the podcast will feature Black Country legend Rhianne Evans. Oh, now this is an audio service, but a lovely double fist pump from Rhianne there. Proud of where you are. Now that's why it's annoying when you say you don't like your accent, you see.
Yeah. Just need more of it on TV and then I'll be all right.
She's from just up the road from me and I've followed her amazing career closely as a result. My question for Rhianne is this. A few years ago, I remember Steve Davis claiming that women couldn't compete with men because, quotes, unquote, their brains were wired differently. Hopefully, the culture of the game has moved on significantly since then. But if Rhianne was in charge of snooker for one day, what one further change would she make to the game to improve the opportunities for women players and to encourage more women to get involved in playing the game? Finally, please tell Rhianne that in Bilston, we think she's Boston.
Is that local lingo?
It's Boston, yeah.
We don't say that in Hackney very often. So, what one further change would you make then to Rhianne to improve the opportunities for women players and to encourage more women to get involved in playing the game?
It's several.
Give us as many as you want.
Just supporting the women's tour. I think that's the main thing. It's getting it, people viewing it, getting out there for people to see. Because if you don't see it, you don't believe it, so you don't know what's happening. So for me, when I started playing, I never knew there was a women's tour because I never saw it, never heard of it. So we just need to play it. And obviously you need backing, you need money, you need support. So for me, it's getting it shown. It hasn't got to be live on TV, but it can be streamed, it can be highlights, it could be something. Even played alongside the qualifiers at venues or something like that, just so even those watching the qualifiers can see it. And obviously more money, because if there's more money involved, which is hard without people seeing it, so that's going to come with people viewing it, is more support, more financial support. And it will encourage more women to go part-time or put more hours practicing to say, oh, I can go part-time because I've got a chance to earn a little bit of a living as well as my normal job. So for me, it's getting it out there, getting it publicised and a bit more money pushed behind it.
The comment from Steve Davis there about what brains been wired differently sounds really bad, but actually I think I've spoken to you before, Rhianne, and you've made not the same comment, but you said women can struggle to be, I think you said that, as ruthless as men, or sort of, I don't know what to put words in your mouth because I can't remember the quote, but something like that.
Yeah, definitely. I do think he's on the right path. But I just think we've got to work harder at that sort of side of things. I think we've got to train our brains to be thinking more selfish and more ruthless. And I think with Chris as well, I think that's where he could help me a lot, because he's a lot to do with the mental side as well. And for me, it's one of being comfortable out there. And once you're comfortable out there and you focus, then your game's going to improve anyway. So for me, I do think he is on the right track. I do think we are built slightly different. And because I could be playing, I'm thinking, is Lauren okay? Have I done this? Have I done that? Whereas I think a man can sort of push that aside for a bit longer and just focus on what he's doing. But in general, I just think we have to work a lot harder at that level. And it's only just sort of come to fruition that that's what we need to do. So now we know what it is, we can work on it. And I think that's where we're so far behind, let alone like playing. But mentally, I think that's what we need to do, work on the mental side a bit more. Mm-hmm.
Well, all but very interesting, Rhianne. Thank you. And Dan Cooper next on Twitter. Well, his first question, I think you kind of answered already. He says, who was your favourite player growing up when you first got interested in snooker? But you all didn't have one, did you, from what you told us?
But No, not before. And
well, the second one then is, which professional have you practised with the most? And Dan says, cheers and all the best for the new season.
I did sort of have a poster of Stephen Endre and Alan McManus on the wall, but I think it was my brothers and I pinched them. No, I did used to watch, once I got into it, I watched Stephen Endre, but obviously now it's like Ronnie, I think he's amazing. But who do I practice with the most? It's got to be like, I practice with like Chris Wakely and Mark Joyce and all those, because they're quite local. Played Tom Ford a couple of times and things like that. But yeah, I'm trying to get Jimmy down for a practice.
Is Jimmy flying in practice? He usually tells us that he's...
he's always flying. No, but it's like anyone can do it in practice, can't they? But he's getting out there. I think he just puts too much pressure on himself, Jimmy. He's got that label of being one of the legends of the sport, and he just never wants to let go of it, I don't think. But he just needs to enjoy it more, relaxed. Because when he does his exhibitions and things like that, he's brilliant. So he's just got to try and transfer that to the table and you'll win a few more matches.
I was wondering if there was anyone you were really looking forward to or hoping you get drawn against at some point over the next couple of years. And I thought Jimmy might be one of them, but is he, or is there anyone you'd really like to play?
Well, you've got to say Ronnie, Judd, Jimmy, those sort of people, because they attract all the audiences. But obviously you want it a bit later on, so you get used to the conditions a little bit. Yeah, but no, if you're in it to play those people and be in that atmosphere, it's like Andrew said, if you don't want to play them people, them players at the best, why do you want to play snooker? Mm. So it's a bit like, yeah, you've got to look at the same way as everyone else and think that's who you want to play and you want to experience all that. But might not have the outcome you want, but no, because they're just machines, aren't they? But no, you've got to look forward to playing those sort of players.
Andrew would be a good opportunity there as well. That might be fun.
Yes, he was the only one to beat me in one of the Legends tours we did. He was so determined. He's back to his ruthlessness years ago. He's like, I'm not losing. but doing those sort of Legends tours helped me. Playing all those Legends in that atmosphere is what we sort of playing with crowds and match-like conditions. So hopefully we can do more of those as well, and it'll help me along my journey.
What you mentioned there, I think we've spoken to this about this before as well. Rightly or wrongly, men don't want to lose to you, do they?
No.
And I mean, it'd be silly to ignore that as a fact. And that there is an added pressure, and you've got to use that to your advantage, haven't you?
Yeah, most definitely. No matter if they could really like you and really respect that you're on tour and think it's fantastic, but they've still got to get all the stick if you do beat them and say, oh, you've lost and you're the first one to lose to a woman and all this. But I love it. I do. I just love that aspect of it. It's a bit of fun as well. So I remember playing Ken, and I know Ken a little bit as well, and I could see his whole body shaking when I played him. And he was like, I've never been under that much pressure. And he says, it's not because I think it's you, it's because everyone else think it's you. Because he's such a nice bloke, Ken. And he's just like, I've just never been so much pressure in all my life. But again, it's also a lot of pressure for them, and people don't realise that. It's not just a normal game of snooker. A bit like Sean when we played at the Champions. It does put pressure on them as well.
Just to say that when Rianne was doing that, you lost a woman. She was waggling her finger like a typical mother. Proper ticking off pose there.
I never even realised I'd done that.
Next, Daniela Daniel on Twitter. What are your... We've kind of already gone through this in some ways, but what are your main goals for the season, she asks.
It's just to enjoy it, try and get the best out of my game. But obviously, being a new professional, you want to stay professional. So the aim is to, at the end of the 2 years, is still be professional. And that's what everyone aims for as a new professional, or just being back on tour and things like that. So the end goal, fingers crossed, would be still be professional in 2 years' time.
And we got Michael Wright on Twitter from the Talking Balls pod. Thank you for contacting us, Michael. Similar question, what would you consider to be a successful season for 21-22? This next one, rather than looking across the 2 years, this next one coming.
Obviously, you want to get some wins under your belt, and obviously the sooner you do that, the more comfortable you're going to be going on throughout the year. So it's just to get a couple of wins under my belt, really, and hopefully, even if I don't win, even if I've put in a few good performances, you just want to play your best game, basically. But I'm very much like one of those, take it step by step and work on it, because at the minute I feel like I've gone back to doing a bit of learning about the game and my game with Chris, and new things to learn and focus on. So if I put them into practice, then I feel confident.
Where do you think your game is, your game now, as good as it ever has been? Are you sort of coming into your peak?
It's hard to say. I haven't played for nearly 2 years, so it's hard, because when you're younger, you have no fear, and you do just want to pot everything. And as you get older, you get a bit tentative, I think, and you think about things more. So I just, hopefully all my experience is going to help me through this sort of next 2 years, and fingers crossed I can be better and better. Because I do feel like if I play my best game, I can compete. I'm not saying at the right at the top, but as a professional, I think I can compete.
I think surely what will help as well, having 2 years or a year or two on the tour, at the minute you've just been chucked in to say like the shootout, which is just random, and and the World Championship qualifiers, which is the most pressurised environment you could possibly go into.
Yeah.
To sort of get your feet under the table in some what you might call normal tournaments, will give you an advantage to settle in a bit more, I think.
Yeah, most definitely. It's a bit like they expect you to play well on live on TV, like the Champion of Champions, against top four player was Sean, I'm not sure, but he's up there, isn't he? And it's like you try and play your best, perfect snook, and it's never going to happen. So you're putting pressure on yourself straight away. And to do that once in a blue moon, it's even going to be hard for those sort of players. So to think you could do that, it's hard. So hopefully regular competitive snooker against all different types of players is hopefully going to improve my game. And fingers crossed, me and Anya can both do it for the women.
And what qualities would you say Anya has? What, when you look at her game and her sort of temperament, what impresses you about her?
A temperament. It is a temperament. She never knows when she's beat. She'll just keep going. And she's, for me, what I've noticed, she's good at forgetting the bad stuff. She can just move on, which is one of my bad points, I think. And that, for me, that is her best thing. And she's such a hard worker as well. She puts the hours in. She wants to do her best and give herself the best chance. And that's sort of the perspective I've took with my new lease life, being a professional this year.
And obviously you'll have a lot of people on your side, but will you take particular inspiration and help from Onye and from each other as you head into this new, I know she can't start yet, that's a shame, but when she does start, will you take a lot of solace and inspiration from each other?
Yeah, definitely. I think we've shared a few texts already and, oh, come on, girl power and all this do it for the women. And right. So for each other, and although we're competitive, we are quite good friends when we're not on the table. So I think that's a whole thing about women's snooker. I think we're all virtually friends until we're on the table, and then obviously it's your worst enemy on the table, isn't it? But it's one of those, we have to support each other. We've got to build it up and show that we can do it. And at the end of the day, if she wins before me or if I win before her, it's going to spur you on to put in a good performance and get on with it. Because I also remember when I was first on tour, I played Neil Robertson, and he had to clear up to beat me 4-3 in 2010 at a PTC. And Jimmy Robertson was watching, and he was talking to Paul Mount, who was our manager at the time. And he says, I've just watched Rianne there, and I feel like I'm buzzing for her, and I can't wait to play my game now, and things like that. So that's the way I think we're going to work. I think we're going to spur each other on, basically.
And with these random draws at the British Open next month, you might even play each other.
I know, yeah. How weird would that be? Yeah, it's quite possible, isn't it? But yeah, imagine if that had happened. It's a bit like Jimmy playing Andrew, you know?
Yeah, that was incredible. Well, darkness has fallen in the garden there, Phil, which I think is a sign that maybe we should think about wrapping up. Have you got any more questions there, first of all, sir? I don't think I have any particular more here.
I'm good. I've put a little tick next to all my notes, so all my boxes are ticked.
Good. And Rianne, is there anything that you'd like to say that we haven't sort of touched upon that you think you'd like to sort of express or to say ahead of your new campaign?
Basically, I just want to say thanks to everyone who supported me. We've had a lot of negativity, but with my two sponsors as well now, Romara and Rocket, obviously they back Jimmy and Ronnie as well, so it's a big name for me to wear on my waistcoat, and obviously Jason, Francis and the family and everything. I just want to thank them for letting me have this opportunity, and I'm going to do the best I can for them.
Well, that's smashing, and you've been a terrific guest, and we've really loved having you, and thank you so much. Will you come back and see us again one day, even when you're much more famous than you are now, perhaps?
Only if you say Boston again.
It's a deal. We wish you all the best for the new season, Rianne, and thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
You're going to have to text me how to spell that so I can put it in some of my copy, I think.
Literally, you say Boston. Okay.
Yeah, no, thank you again. It's been great. And yeah, I think best of luck for this Thursday, isn't it? It's coming around very soon. So I think there'll be a lot more eyes watching your group than would normally be watching some other groups of the Championship League.
Oh, thank you very much, Phil.
Well, that's brilliant. Well, we wish Rianne well for the new season, of course. Phil, we'll be back probably on Sunday, won't we? Because we want to look ahead to the next week of Championship League games. And, of course, look back on the days to come, which will include Rianne. But we must disappear now. Before we do, I just want to have a quick word about a Sporting Life podcast called Sporting Lives, presented by Ollie Bell. And Judd Trump is his latest guest on there. Really interesting listen, actually, if you search for Sporting Life in the search box of your favourite podcast provider. Good to have more snooker audio out there, isn't it? And always interesting to hear what Judd has to say ahead of another big season for him.
Yeah, there was some really interesting insight there from Judd. He does have interesting things to say a lot of the time, yeah. It's good stuff about what it's like playing Ronnie. That was very interesting. And there's comments about feeling like he needs to put on a show to avoid sort of stick on social media was quite interesting as well. Judd's had a busy time. If you're following him on Instagram, he's having a nice time with the England boys in Mykonos. I was a little bit jealous of that because I've not been away for a while, but I'm glad to see he's enjoying himself.
Yeah, I'm a bit confused by that. I think he told Ollie Bell he's not a big football fan, and yet doesn't he seem to be with the England team nearly every year now? or big players anyway.
Well, he didn't have to watch the football. I think he just liked going out partying, so fair enough.
Fair enough. Well, and why not? You know, at a time as bad as this for many people, it must be lovely to let your hair down like that. But anyway, we must depart. Phil, I shall see you on Sunday. Rhianne, thank you very much indeed. And keep your thoughts coming to us, talkingsnooker@yahoo.com, or tweet us at talkingsnooker. But for now, from this lovely episode of Talking Snooker, from Rhianne, Phil and myself, is cheerio.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.